This is Bracken Crocker with the Race Brain Podcast. Today's episode is the Big Bear National Series event recap. We talk about the movers, the shakers, stock up, stock down. And if this is the type of content you enjoy and you get something out of this, subscribe so you don't miss what comes next.
All right, Race Brain Podcast, episode 2 is underway. Today we're here to talk about Big Bear. Right now, I have Bracken Crocker and Kirk DeWint with me. Jack Bauer is disgraced. He put up the worst score in fantasy and just decided he might be done with fantasy for good. What are you guys thinking about this?
He's 0-2, and he's hit the road, tail tucked firmly between his legs.
He's so embarrassed he cannot show his face, and I love it.
I mean, he's gotten last before, so with the addition of Kirk here, does that have something to do with it? Kirk, are you like really giving him the business? Like, are you sending him side texts about how terrible he is at this? Is this like, what's happened?
Not really, but see, people like to lump Jack and I together because we both have, I have ginger tendencies and Jack is full-blown ginger, right? And I just want to differentiate us two, and this burying him last week, I feel like is a good start to that, separating the two. You know, the prime cut right. Versus the
silverback
second grade.
Tearing into the clearing, lifted his leg up, urinated all over the place, and then the lesser male just kind of drifted off into the foliage.
There seems to be no other explanation. Yeah, that is just the way the world works, especially those of ginger tendencies. I don't know much about that, but the ginger side of things, I suppose.
Well, you know, some people fully embrace being a ginger and they're like, yeah, I'm a ginger. And then some people sort of like are a little reticent about it. I'm still in like the reticent camp. So just let me be there and you know, differentiate.
Yeah. I had a buddy who would like, I remember in high school, he was like looking in the mirror one time. He was like, kind of doing, he's like, my hair's not even that red. I was like, sure thing, man. whatever you think.
I've said that about 100 times in my life. So.
All you need is a little, even if you have like red in the beard, I think you'll get put into ginger category.
I'll tell you what, Rich, sure. I'm going to fully fill Jack's void on this show.
Okay.
On this show. I have stats. I broke form today. I did a little bit of research. I dug into the numbers. I have all the numbers we could need. So Jack's really, he doesn't even have a place at the table today. We can do it both.
I mean, it sounds great to me, except that we have him on that graphic and like he's like on the podcast art. So like we need to figure that out. But in terms of the content, Jack's out. All right.
I think the noblest of things is when you make fun of somebody who isn't there to defend themselves. So as
long as we pull it off. We nailed it. We're talking about Big Bear. So first I want to talk about how we consumed this. And we were doing our chat. Bracken and I, we were both at the airport flying home from Vegas after High Rocks and kind of doing our best. Kirk, you mentioned you had some FOMO. How were you consuming this as it was happening? Because there wasn't necessarily a live stream happening at the time.
Yeah, good question. I was entertaining, like my sister was visiting. So I was hopping on and off of my phone, looking at Instagram feed updates. I felt like I have like a half picture of how the race unfolded. And then half of it is still, you know, I'm filling in the blanks. But for the most part, I think I understand how things went. But just Instagram updates, that's all I was popping into. What about you guys?
Bracken?
My Strava, not Strava, where am I today? I'm still gloating over just eviscerating Jack Bauer on this pick. My Spartan live tracking never loaded on multiple devices. I don't
really.
I don't know why. Yeah, it would just come up.
Android. Blank. That's why.
Android. Yeah, classic Spartan. But so I didn't get any of that. So I was relying on screenshots from you guys, and then my best source I found was the OCR report. They had the best stories. It actually did paint a story of the race. There were probably 20 different stories on there, and I just watched them in order, and I got a good feel of what was there, but there were certainly things missing. And then Kirk was talking about how he went deep dive Strava stalking on segments to find out the story of who climbed well, who descended well. And
oh, great.
Filled in some of the holes as well, mm-hmm. But it actually brought up more questions than it answered.
Bracken, I think I was in a similar place. Only my live tracker was working on my phone and it was actually updating. I think I was able to send like, and that that was how I was corresponding with you guys. I was able to send some updates about what was happening. At least there was at least two, maybe three updates throughout the race, which was much better than slow. So we had an idea of who was where a little bit. It's still not great, but maybe I'm just used to Athlinks and I'm just getting over the pain of having to relearn something. But at least it did have some live updates.
Were you even in a place to absorb the results as they were coming in Sunday morning? Like cerebrally?
You talk about speaking of getting over the pain. I saw just this haggard knockoff version of Rich Ryan stumble out of the Westgate towards Lisa and I while we were waiting for our Ubers to the airport. What time did you get home?
it was about 5. So we were at High Rocks in the after party. Actual DJ Khaled was there. But I mean, how much Vegas time have you guys like spent in your lives? In like your mid 20s, early 30s when you had some money or something? Nothing?
A few weeks total. I have.
Okay. Weeks. So like
weeks total?
Yeah, well, the bachelor stuff, we always dipped in the Vegas.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. That makes sense. Yeah. So, you know, it was a straight up typical club scene where it was incredibly crowded and just everybody pushed into a similar spot, crazy loud, really dark. This was supposed to be our after party, and High Rocks had rented a couple cabanas on the pool end of things, and they ordered a ton of bottles. They must have spent so much money at this party because they just had bottle service coming out. And that's not like
– this is the anti-Spartan after party. They took care of everything for you.
Well, it was – the only thing is that it didn't feel like it was for us, right? It was like – it was just a party that High Rocks was kind of doing more for themselves as a company, which like good for them. They put on this crazy season and event. So it felt like it was more for the High Rocks people. There wasn't that many athletes. A lot of people were getting turned away for like wearing shorts and stuff. Like, you know, it's Vegas. Like you have to like
it said
look
dress
away.
Code in the email.
It did.
Very clearly.
It did. Apparently that's Hunter didn't make it, showed up in like overalls or some shit. and his High Rocks World Championship didn't get him to skip the line. That was another thing. There was a huge line because it was like it wasn't communicated like where to go. But we were with Amy and Kent's wife, Sarah, and they just kind of like did the Vegas thing that females can do in Vegas and got us to like the front of the line and stuff like that. But man, we were out there. Didn't get home until
Rich,
about.
You live that clean life. I feel like you're pretty good at separating, right? You don't intertwine the dirty and the clean when it's time to train. It's time to train. So I got to imagine that night hit you pretty hard.
I slept until about noon yesterday and I've slept till about 10 today. So yeah, I haven't trained since. That was my version of a double-double, no cooldown. Double-down, no cooldown.
I like that reference. Now, Rich came out looking like he had just been through a war. And his wife strolls out just looking normal. They'd been home for 3 hours, and now they're outside the hotel. But man, Rich, I saw a side of you that I was impressed with.
Thank you. Not the race. You were post-race.
I don't know why, but... We're going to talk about people's stocks going up and down. And for some reason, knowing this now makes your stock go up in my eyes. And I'm not sure why, it just does.
People are buying. People are buying stock. Yeah, even the guy at TSA through security was like, yeah, he must have had a night. And that's in Vegas on a Sunday morning, picks at me. like I was that guy. Like he's never seen anybody like that. I was like, damn, really? All right.
Yeah, when at Vegas airport in the morning, you stand out for looking haggard. You know you did something.
So I was able to watch the race fairly well, kind of understanding what was going on through it. And OCR Report did have some really good stories that I was able to catch on later to kind of put it together. And same with ORM had a couple of things on there and just then being able to kind of like read some stories from the athletes.
VJ's girlfriend, I assume? Was on his account.
Oh, that's right.
Had some stories and some posts about it. That was helpful.
That's right. Which is always, yeah, it's always disorienting when I see other people racing on their stories. I'm like, wait, what am I looking at right now?
Already?
Yeah, are they there? Yeah. Well, Casey Monroe was there who didn't run, and she was putting up stories and media stuff as well. So I was like, maybe. So let's just talk about the men's race. Jack is going to come. I think he's going to show up for us, and he'll be able to give us a paint a better picture of the female race, as he was focusing on that one in particular. But from what I can kind of, let's just put this together. We got some puzzle pieces. We'll just start like trying some things and putting in place. What it looked like to me, I saw a story of the sandbag carry. It looked like pretty similar to Big Bear in 2021, where it was Josiah, Lars, and Atkins were at least the three who were at the sandbag carry first. And I think it was Batris, I think, kind of engaged early as well. And this is the first climb, which probably is, what do you think, Kirk? Like, do you think you're gaining 1,000 feet in that climb to the sandbag, even though it's not all the way to the top? You think it's like 800 feet?
Oh, I do. Yeah. I think just circa day 1,000 feet. Yeah.
So what did you guys see there? Was that about similar to what you guys thought was happening?
Hawk was in the mix.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I thought he would be up further earlier for some reason with how aggressive he ran in Utah last year, last time we saw him in the mountains.
It seemed like a massive group of people from 5 to 12. Like Angel was in there, Nick Mask was in there, Aaron was in there. I think Kempson, Woods, they were all in that mix early on. And it was a huge group outside of – and then VJ was actually in that second group, I thought it looked like, where the Lars and Josiah group got away with Atkins. And it looked like VJ was settling way back. He may have been in 6th or 7th. At the top, at that first carry there. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's interesting when you say way back though, like when you even look at how the results ended up shaking out on paper at the end of the race, way back means like 20 seconds. Back in the day, way back meant 2 minutes. You know what I'm saying? Like that group wasn't way back by old standards. That group was way back by new age 2022 standards.
That's a good point, but Lars missed his spear and VJ didn't catch him.
Yeah, saw that. I mean, by the end of the race, that unshook. But on that first climb, I'm talking.
For sure. Right. It was almost like a road race where it's like a pack here and a pack there, 5 seconds different.
We talked after slow that we didn't – me, I think I mentioned this, a couple other people talked, that we didn't necessarily get any new information on Lars. We still – beforehand, we said we just want to see Lars again. We don't have a body of work from him. And we saw Lars again.
Man,
and I think that he proved everything we thought he might be. He might have just stepped in and outside of maybe Albin is just instantly the best climber in the sport.
And he looks the part too. He's about 175. He's like a bigger dude. Mm-hmm. Being able to climb that way. So he's strong. I think he's worked in labor in his past. So his hands are strong, right? He's just like has all these things that kind of just set him in to do well, and he's doing well. So he's apparently competitive and he's ready to get after it.
And he's the rim to rim to rim holder, record mm-hmm. holder, which we've talked about. That is a prestigious FKT in the Grand Canyon, and you can't get that easily. That's a legit thing. Mm-hmm. And he can also lead the first climb of a race. He has the high end. Like you said, he broke 15 in a 5K recently. He's got enough high end get up and go that he doesn't seem to have a weakness right now in the speed or endurance department. He hasn't won the race yet, but it's not engine for him and it's not speed. And it makes me wonder what we're going to see this year when he does a beast distance or dabbles in an ultra distance,
mm-hmm.
because rim to rim to rim is very demanding time-wise as well.
Do we know his age?
Now, was he rim to rim to rim or rim to rim? Which one was it? Because I thought Walmsley
rim
had
to rim,
rim to rim.
I think it's
rim to rim to rim is very long, right?
Yeah. It might have just
been
a single.
We need Jack to fact check.
So how old is Lars?
I miss Jack. I think, I don't know, somewhere in the, I actually have no idea. Let me see if it says it on.
You're like a 30-something? Low 30, young, 29. I'm just wondering about his longevity because he seems to be diving into this. Like he seems to be diving in. He's alluding. You know, he will be running some of the series races later this year, but won't be able to put together an entire score. Sounds like from his last post in his race recap. But like he's young enough if he's that good now and he can stick around a while. Like, you know, we find like a Josiah Madow who finds his sport late. He ends up committing to the sport later in his career, where Lars is not later in his career. And so I think he might just be another player that's inserted instantly into the mix and we can maybe count on being around for a while if he chooses.
And that's just the unfortunate spot that he's in now. Well, he must have been, he's at least tier something, right? Because
he's tier two, I think.
Okay. So yeah, but I think a lot of it is just the travel demands from living in Alaska and then having to travel so much that this is like an expense thing, I think.
Realistically. He's someone that actually gets hurt by Abu Dhabi moving to a super distance. Because if you put him with his engine and his ability to power hike, which he's phenomenal at, there are uphill runners and uphill power hikers. And not everyone who can run uphill can power hike the same way. He can power hike with the best of them. You put that engine and those legs on that super steep, grindy Abu Dhabi beast course, and he might be a real contender.
Yeah,
I forgot that was a super until this point. But if he stays fast,
not that he has a chink in his armor, because he obviously doesn't. But I would say, you know, he may be more of the mountain goat than anything else. He was running in fifth or sixth in San Luis Obispo, just in front of me, and we both missed our spears. But we had already been gapped by that, you know, the true speedsters on the front end of the field. So seems like, I mean, don't get me wrong, maybe he would have charged hard. We don't know in that race. But I would say that we could almost classify him more as a mountain goat, couldn't we, at this point? I mean, for sure that feather's in his cap.
Probably because I would chalk that up mostly to lack of experience and skill around the obstacles, right? Like, because he obviously has the high-end level of running to get there, but the things might slow him down just a little bit where he can't access it totally. On the mountains, things slow down, so it's not as important. Things can kind of gap out, so... maybe in Abu Dhabi would be okay since it's not necessarily fast, right? You can kind of be slowing down, even though the new course might be a little bit faster, right, Bracken, from what we understand. Might not be straight sand dunes.
It's not the same locations. You won't have that big, massive one. But the other thing I think that confirms what Kirk is saying is that I think he is significantly more of a mountain goat than a flatlander because, yeah, he's sub 15, but sub 15 is starting to become a dime a dozen in this sport.
Yeah, which is... sub 15.
Rich Ryan's a sub 15, aren't you, Rich? Your last crack at a 5K?
Not officially. That was a 3 mile. I've never been officially under, but like there's been times where I think I could have. So it's PR? Like one of those 15:05.
What did you run your last 5K in during that Army 10 miler?
Oh yeah, that was probably something kind of close to that. My last 5K.
06, your last 5K or something like that?
Something like that. And like my last 5K in the OCR star 6 mile, I think, would have been under.
Right. So
like it covered the
case in point is what I'm
saying. You're practically sub 15 after 7 miles of a 10 miler. So, and I don't know if you would step into a course and say, I'm by far the fastest person here. Mm-hmm. You'd say, I can run with about anyone. Mm-hmm. But he steps onto a mountain and says, I think I'm just the fastest climber here.
I think so too. And he's 32.
Yeah, what?
32.
32. What I find even more impressive, and I will, you know, I'm going to stand on this rock to the day I die, and I've talked about this in the running public, but Lars lives at as sea level as it gets. Lars lives below sea level practically, living where he does in Anchorage, Alaska, and then goes and climbs over 9,000 feet of elevation and still like has that engine. He was at a handicap, and so is Orion Atkins, really, but like, he's at a handicap in leading that climb, which makes him even more impressive. Put him on a course out east or in Abu Dhabi that's more at sea level. Like, I'm scared to see what that dude can do. You got to factor that in.
That Kelowna course in like, mm-hmm. is probably closer to him if it's going to be a beast distance at like sea level-ish, varied terrain.
And this is what Kirk and I were talking about in our private reactions afterward was, why are these two just out climbing people? Why is Ryan Atkins climbing away from everyone? Historically, when has he ever been a take a mountain course from the gun and just stretch people out? There have always been people who can get out. We used to look at Woodsy back in the day, would just be, you know, meters and meters and meters ahead of him, or Killian would be, or someone would get out and just put a gap on him, and Atkins would downhill an obstacle and carry his way back into it and then wouldn't fade. And his last downhills were as fast as his first, and he would stretch it out. We don't see Ryan come out at altitude and just trash people from the start. And he did. Where are everyone's legs right now?
Do you think it's him simply seeing the results, like feeling the results at slow and being like there's competition here. I need to lean into these strengths that I have a little bit more, or build a strength that I might not have had in the past of climbing and blasting people out the front, because he doesn't want people to like hang around.
I think it's a mindset.
Kirk's shaking his head yes.
It's a mindset. You always say, like, we keep all our receipts. Well, he has a number of receipts that he's been holding on to, and that's Big Bear last year. That is San Luis Obispo. That's getting outfoxed a little bit in the Spartan games by VJ in some of the events. I think he went in like, I will die on this mountain, and I think he went out there from the gun with that mentality. I don't know how much better his fitness is because it can only get so much better at this point. I think it was his mind. That's just what I think.
Very rarely do I fully disagree with you, Kirk. Usually we agree differently on things, but I fully disagree here. You can't fake a thing at altitude, and I don't care how many receipts you have in your pocket, they don't add percentage points to your VO2. It's the second time I've said that phrase in the last 24 hours of recording episodes, but I will die on that hill. You can't add VO2 max points at altitude. You only lose them. And so I don't care how excited you are or intense, you can't fake it for an hour in a race. You just can't. And especially that first climb, if you get out a little hot, we all know how oppressive that feels at altitude. So what it means is A, his fitness has improved, but it wasn't him overextending because you can't at altitude without it coming back on you in spades. It's that other people were either not as good as him or they underextended early. The field just played.
You right don't think it could be a combo of both, maybe both your argument and my argument?
I'm sure.
Maybe.
I'm not saying I'm right, but I see it as much as they played into his hands as he played an excellent hand. Before last race, Rich, you asked, what is his route to victory? And I said, I don't know what it is because he doesn't have he's not the take the bull by the horns and fight from the start. He just always winds up in first and then stretches it out. Well, they gave him his path to victory. They allowed him to get away from them, and no one's catching him on the back half of courses other than occasionally VJ. It just blew me away that nobody inserted themselves into the race. Either they couldn't or they were afraid of the altitude.
Who would you expect in this scenario that you're talking about? Because we had Josiah and Lars. They were the ones, again, carrying that pace to start. And then it seems like Atkins was the only one happy to kind of latch on. And then when we look at the results, you know, Fiji, like we said, was a little bit back. Ryland was fifth. Aaron was sixth. Batchers was seventh. Josh Reed, eighth. Hawk, and then Angel round out the top 10.
Yeah.
Who's the person that should have been there and been like, I'm not afraid of this pace?
Well, I don't want to go Kendrick Perkins in my old age.
No.
Be that person who just is starting to turn around and jab my finger into the chest of active athletes who are out there doing it. You know, that's not who I want to be. So I'm just going to point my finger at the field as a whole. I counted 15 athletes, 15 males in this field who have checked one of three criteria boxes. First, they have been on a U.S. National Series podium. Second, they have won or podiumed at a North American championship, or third, they have been top five at a world championship. 15 individuals have met one or more of those three criteria. And do you know how many of them at any point were ahead of him on a climb? Two.
One.
Yeah.
One. Josiah might have passed him at one point, but I don't know if he actually did.
I think he was.
So the field went 2 for 15, getting someone ahead of him as a group effort. I say that's just a failure. So not calling out any individuals, but you're telling me 15 people who have proved to be the top 3 to 5 in their region, nation, or world, and not one person put himself out there and took that same perceived chance that Ryan Atkins did and said, I'm going to make him have to make a business decision. Ryan didn't have to make a single decision for the worse that entire race.
Well, he earned that, but I would like to think, okay, who, if we don't want to just generalize the field as a whole, who would we have liked to or thought should have inserted themselves in the race up front aside from who did? Like, who missed the mark or missed their opportunity? Does anybody stand out to you? It's worth the discussion.
That's what I was saying. I couldn't really grab anybody in those names that I had riddled off. That was kind of the point I was looking for. It's like, who out of this group is the person that is going to, like, you would like it to be VJ, but we knew it wasn't going to be VJ, right? Like, he was going to run his race. He had the blueprint from October, and, you know, like, I don't think this race meant what it meant to him in October this time through. And then the rest of the guys, like Josh Reed, maybe Sean Stevens Whale, I think could be up there. I think he tried to assert himself. Like, who are the climbers in this? And the rest of it's like a lot of young guys, right? Like a Nick Mask, a Hawk Call, a Ryland, like it's, I think their experience, like the Woodsies and the Kempsons were just like a little bit further back than they would have been in previous years.
For me, I would have liked to have seen Hawk. I would have liked to have seen Hawk only because he's done it before. And then I also thought we would have saw Mark Botrus at least insert himself a little more aggressively into that first climb. He did. I mean, he got after it, but I think I wouldn't have been surprised to see him up front on the first climb. He's done it before in mountain races. Those are the two that jump out to me. Not that they didn't race smart. I'm sure they did, but those jump out to me.
But I think that's my point. My point is that we last saw a mountain altitude race where there were people doing this very thing we talked about. Hawk just blew it wide open. You know, we've seen Rylan. He's more of a closer, but we've seen Josiah, Lars, obviously. We've seen anyone. I'm going to generalize anyone who lives at altitude and has done anything in the sport. When was that? That was a year ago almost. So in the last year, all the people who gave us hope, who kind of got us all titillated that they're going to be the next thing, and they live at altitude. That's always the big thing. They're at altitude. They have this big advantage on mountain altitude courses. We started this year and said, this is the mountain altitude series. Where what happened in the last year that Ryan just is once again king? That mountain doesn't matter. Altitude doesn't matter. Our sea level living Ryan Atkins still is the best, but now it's even more convincing than last year.
So you can say that after his slow performance, it's easy to switch the flip or flip the switch just like that, one race to the next.
That I just don't get it. I don't get that the person who didn't get the benefit of moving to altitude or getting another year there stretched his hold over the field. It was just strange not to see any of these people we were excited about out there even on one climb.
Yeah, and I think that although this is kind of a mountain altitude series, these courses are still different. You know, when we talk about Hawk Call doing well in Utah, those Utah climbs are not Big Bear climbs. You know, so that might just be he's a younger athlete just coming off of collegiate cross country and track and field, like that type of muscular endurance needed for that type of climb. He's probably not, hasn't spent the 15 years that Atkins has, even though it's, you know, he's grown up around mountains. That's what I would chalk up to Hawk, just like feeling that type of intensity on that type of grade is just like a little bit much.
That's a good point. About 90% in the front end of the men's field, 90% of Utah is runnable, maybe 95. And in Big Bear, it's 70% at best, maybe 60. And that's where the power hikers start shining through. It's a very good point. I didn't think about that.
It is a good point. And I think the final piece of that that has me puzzled is that if you were an altitude guy and people were coming up to altitude, would you feel more or less comfortable with your chances against them as the distance got shorter or longer? Where would you be most comfortable against someone who's fresh to altitude? What's the distance you think you could work them over at?
Shorter the better, in my opinion.
I think just being at altitude for 3 months now, that in short intensity stuff is much, much more difficult.
Yeah, I think 5 minutes, under five is still pretty good. But like, over five and under an hour are kind of that spot where you can't adapt to that. You have to work too hard. And I just, again, I was weird that if I'm an altitude guy, which I've been in the past, you get out at altitude and you take people into deep waters 20 minutes earlier than they would get there without altitude. And we didn't see anyone play that hand. The sport's so good now. We saw that chase pack all within seconds of each other. The sport's so good that strategy now matters again. It's not just engine, which it was for a few years. People had an ace that they held onto and then never got to lay it. And that's the confusing part to me, that maybe they just couldn't. Maybe Ryan has improved that much, but maybe then the different question is, how is he improving faster than the guys who are younger than him and they have the benefit of altitude?
Question. Yeah. He was just on that vacation with the Hosicks and they ran a sky race. They looked like they were over there for what, 10 days? Was he living at altitude then? Was he getting some altitude in at that point? Did he come over feeling all right after being in that mountain range for a while?
I don't know. Don't know. Good question.
Thank you.
Again, though, like we're reaching for things. He was there 10 days. These other guys had 12 months more of altitude. I have a hard time.
Entire lifetimes.
Some had lifetimes. Some of these young guys are new to it. Some are not. But 12 months and he came out the most improved in the mountains out of the very top end. And so again, that was very surprising. I did not, if you would have told me Ryan won, I would have said, how far back was he before he started closing? Not how did he get to the front so quickly?
Yeah.
Do you think we should maybe list off the, like the order and times of people so they can wrap their head around what we're talking about? Do we do that on this show? Or do we not do that on this show?
Sometimes. Has a graphic for us. I know. Well, yeah, Bracken, those stats you laid out, those were pretty good stats. That was some research done. That you were right. You're on it.
We're just scratching the surface today, Richard.
we got depths to go.
A couple of things I found interesting. I don't know where they were, like when I was combing through Strava. And I don't know if everybody's race is on Strava. Most of the top end pros are on there, but Ryan Atkins out descended absolutely everybody on some of the marked descents. Johnny Luna Lima was slower than Ryan Atkins. Some of the other guys, I mean, there was a minute, like minutes of gaps on some of these descents. So Atkins still's got it. He obviously not only climbed well, but he descended well. So it wasn't like he was trying to get ahead of somebody who could then descend faster than him. He out descended everybody. He basically out climbed everybody. Couple of things I thought were interesting were like some of the climbs out of like I believe Aaron Newell was the king of the mountain on one climb.
Nice.
Some of these guys climbed really well and then didn't follow that up with good descents, which I just found interesting how that shook out. But the big thing was just seeing that both sides of the coin, Atkins won, you know, earned it going up and down.
And maybe that's just the simplest explanation is the right one. He's just better than everybody still. Maybe it's just... Yeah. Nothing you could, and that's what sounded like with Lars's recap. What happened is that like Atkins got away from him, even though he was on the descent, even though Lars was at the spear at the same time as Atkins.
Like, Lars was still top five on all the descents.
Was it? Who was like second and third? Was Johnny second?
Johnny VJ was in there.
Nice. Yeah.
But we're talking seconds, single digit seconds between the next five people. Kempson, Lars, and Johnny.
I think Josh Reed was up there.
Josh Reed was in there in a few. Although, are we allowed to talk about a female yet? Are we saving that?
Now that you teased it, let's talk about. But we still got. I still want to return to finish out the men's. Let's save it. Let's save it.
Okay.
Little teaser. Stick around and we'll talk about the female that descended better than all the males. Make sure you hang around and listen.
But while we're on the topic of male descents, Johnny Luna Lima, that to me was not a disappointment. The fact that he wasn't the fastest down every mountain. Because as we all know, the only way to descend at your best is to be on it. And the only way to really be all the way on it is to be leading or closing, chasing after people. And Johnny wasn't having a great race. It wasn't a bad race, but it wasn't a great race. And he struggled with his fitness. So the fact that he was top two or three on every descent to me is a massive like light in the clouds. There is light at the end of his tunnel. Something's coming back around. Because to be only 2 or 3 seconds behind Atkins on some of these descents, you would say, well, that's not Johnny of old. No, but it's much better of Johnny than recent history. Because you can't fake that. Yeah. If his climbs are in the 15 to 20 rank and his descent is second or third, and he's not like gaining towards the podium, that means that's just his base level descending that he's relying on there. He's not getting any juice out of that descent. So the fact that he can just, his baseline descent is now instantly one of the best in the sport again, I think that bodes really well for Johnny in a few months from now.
I agree. I think that is a good sign and that he's able to feel that type of confidence going through. Let's talk about the depth a little bit. I think maybe, Kirk, this is what you were kind of getting at of how close this race was from, first to 12th or 15th or whatever. A lot like there was a pretty tight spread to get to that podium and to get into that top 10, which is the money. Were you guys surprised? Like, and this is a theme that we talked about it slow, like how little room for error there is and how big of swings that could cost your finishing position. Were you guys surprised to see how tight things were, through, let's just use second. Cause Atkins ended up being about just under 2 minutes ahead of second because of that missed spear. But then Lars was 1:10:14. And then Angel was 1:13:55. So little over 3 minutes from second to 10. Are you guys surprised to see that on a mountain course like this, or is just the distance of things make it reasonable that that's the case?
I would have been surprised years ago, 2-3 years ago, but not anymore. The depth is ridiculous. Yeah, what was it, 5 minutes from first to 10th was the time gap on a mountain course? That's unheard of. Sometimes you see a guy go out there and win it. In a U.S. National Series, you've seen a guy go out and win by 3 to 7 minutes sometimes. Mm-hmm. And now you're seeing a time gap of just under 5 from 1 to 10. And yeah, no, I'm not surprised at all. Are you, Bracken? That just we expected it, I think, this time.
It's yes and no for me. No, I'm not surprised because of those exact same reasons. There's so much parity, but I'm still surprised in the gap between first and third. Maybe not first and third, but second and third. A missed spear not losing you a place in a 10K distance race is pretty shocking with the names who are behind Lars.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you had told me that VJ Jones was chasing Lars and Ryan Atkins, which we've seen on this very course at this distance in the past. If you told all three of us, VJ is chasing Lars and Atkins and the second place of those two misses his spear, what do we all assume happens?
He gets like seventh.
Yeah. And then VJ blows past immediately. Turns out VJ didn't even gain a single spot off that.
It's and crazy.
That doesn't reflect on VJ. That reflects on how good Lars is. We didn't expect to see VJ out of contention for first or second. We thought he's going to battle and he might come up short or he might not. He actually wasn't in it.
Well, you know, it's cursed him. This is the first time we've really brought up VJ in any sort of depth. What does this change, if anything, about our opinions on him? I alluded to in the last episode that VJ's trajectory of improvement should be exponentially faster than others, given his age, his recency to altitude. We expect that trajectory to continue to improve. So we all secretly had maybe even like expectations of seeing something we have not even yet seen out of VJ, for example. Yet he didn't stick his nose up front where we probably expected him to. Like, what does it say about him in your guys' eyes? Anything, or is it just it's one race, too early to tell? And he didn't have a bad race. He had a great race, but he got ran away from.
Rich, you take this because I have some thoughts on this.
Yeah, I probably am not putting too much weight on it. We won't go through his stock, but I wouldn't think it would go up or down necessarily. I don't think people would sell off because of this performance based on where it is in terms of the season. Already has a win under his belt. Is still winning the series with that third place finish because Atkins had that sixth place finish at slow, but I guess he can drop. But anyway, so he'll just have to take care of business later in the season that he did. And I think he has confidence that come October, whenever Blue Mountain is, that he'll be more ready to take on this type of to really kind of put that effort out that he needed for Big Bear. I wouldn't put too much weight onto it.
Yeah. You just think like, we talk about races. Jack likes to talk about races under 75 minutes. When's the last time VJ didn't win or land on a podium? All of those sort of stats, right? And here's the last super in the series. You'd think if there was a course that suited him to steal another one right away, it would be now, right?
Maybe. Yeah, just the timing was different than last year, right? Yeah. Like it is a course where you would think so. He's going to have a harder time beating Atkins on Blue Mountain. That's basically his home turf, right? But I don't know. I don't necessarily know in terms of like season planning, if he can like really dial it. Like, I don't know. Is that worthwhile to change your training around the demands of the race as opposed to the timing of the races? I don't know. Bracken, you had thoughts.
Yeah, I do. VJ came out and made a splash at 16 or whatever he was. And then overextended, tried some things, got his butt handed to him. And then for about 4 straight years now, has just not missed a rep. He has just been laser focused, dialed in, taking incremental steps on the long haul picture. And I think what we are seeing is the first time he's just had some fatigue with the process. He's self-admittedly a little disillusioned with training recently. It's just been a long time between events for someone who only races when they're ready to show up, win, and interested in the race. He races far less than anyone in the sport. And because of that, you have to really be in love with the micro aspects of the process. And I think we just saw him fall a little bit out of love with the process. And I think this is what happens when you're not taking big swings and leaps with your training. When you rely on the steady drip, 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 and suddenly the bucket's not there for a little bit, you're not getting any residual work in. You know, it's not like he had a huge block that now he's absorbing. He's always staying under trained slightly compared to everyone around him. And so it only takes, 4 to 6 weeks for a slightly under trained athlete to detrain. Mm-hmm. Whereas someone with a massive body of work can rely on it a little longer. So I think we just saw a percentage or two reduction in how good he could be in this race. So I don't think it bodes poorly towards anything moving forward. I think that embarrassment's a massive motivator and is probably just what he needed to get that fire back and fabricate another 4, 5, 6 month training block where he gets back to his sequential process.
And I mean, we saw that.
Go ahead.
Sorry. We saw that with the High Rocks this past week. Like someone who's fallen in and out of love with the nuance of training has been Hunter McIntyre over the past, 2 or 3 years or so. Mm-hmm. Right. So we saw that happen to him at the 2021 High Rocks Championship. And we saw it at the North American Championship, him getting beat 2 races in a row. And then he comes out and he's been the fittest that he's ever been, ever. Most fit person in the entire world. And he just brought it. So if Vijay can tap into something like that a little bit, if it is something that would fuel his fire, or if it's by design and he can know to ramp it up, because you're right, we look at him like he's young, but his training, he's been training for 9-10 years now at a pretty high level.
Yeah. And that process, I would say, is not glamorous. It's hard to maintain that your mental fortitude when you're not doing super sexy things ever.
I think embarrassment's probably a strong word to use. You use the word embarrassment.
I'm not embarrassed. No, I don't think it's an embarrassment. I think that he has such a status level of performance in his mind that he expects of himself that third place was not even an option to him.
Oh, I don't think so. I think watching him cross the line, the way he knew at least he left it out there. An embarrassment, I don't know. I don't think he's embarrassed. I didn't get that vibe at all from any sort of the recap. I think he's proud of his effort because I think he knows he left it out there and there was nothing more he could do. It wasn't a weakness of the mind. It was just, I'm not where I need to be. And I think you do often see athletes, he had mentioned that he put in big volume, big vert chasing blocks, maybe a little more than he ever has in the past, really just took time to gear up for this race. And there's always like that sophomore slump with things where like your fitness hasn't surpassed your fatigue yet. And you're just operating at like a cylinder or two underneath what you're actually capable of, just because like the body of work hasn't caught up yet. And you're in that gray zone of where like, I'm just a little more tired. And so I can't access all of my hard work quite yet. Like it will be there and it will be accessed, but we all know we've trained hard for a race, didn't back off enough or something for some reason, and still went in a little bit sluggish, right? And I think there's probably a little bit of that going on. And as Rich said, and I think you agree, Bracken, like this doesn't change my opinion on him at all. And I guess it's speculation, but I think it's more like there was just a little bit of dullness still in there from the big block. He didn't taper for any races. He didn't freshen up at any point until this one. And I've been there in the past when I started chasing vert. I was just running on watered down stumps for a while and I couldn't get out of it. So I let him freshen up. You know what I mean?
I'm gonna agree with you on this one, Kirk. Yeah. I think that he just kind of didn't expect it there. I think that he can expect himself to win or get second at most races under 75 minutes. But I don't think he might not go monk mode after this one. I think it's part of the process right now. All right, let's talk about the women's race a little bit, and then we'll talk about some of the depth of the field when we start to get into buying and selling stocks. So this race, Emma took it out. Emma really was bringing it, and we had questions about the freshness of both Emma and Lindsay going into this race off of the things that they've done in the past, like 2 or 3 weeks, but they're just really good at climbing and descending. So were you guys surprised to see Emma be so assertive for as long as she was? Because basically this came down to a missed spear. Emma got to the spear first and missed, and Lindsay hit, and that's it. So what'd you guys think about the performance at the top with the top two?
Can we just talk about, like, I love watching Emma run. Like, I like what she brings to the table. She's like the most aggressive, throw it all at it. Like, nobody's going to intimidate me. I'm not going to let somebody's accolades slow me down. Or she doesn't respect the accolades, right? She is just like, throws the middle finger to everybody and says, like, I'm going out here and doing this. Like, look at my back. And I don't care. Mm-hmm. We haven't had anybody in the sport. Can you think of the last woman in the sport that has done that at any point other than Lindsay Webster, sometimes in the mountains, or Nicole Miracle on a flat course? Like, I can't think of anybody who just, and she's so new to be doing that. I just think it's like, I love watching her race.
We've seen Renee do it a couple times in the past year where she'll get out and just hammer and then just be like finishing, like,
but
just
that's like a bluff obstacles.
And I don't think she even believes when she does it that it's gonna last.
But Emma does,
like, I can run 540s, 520s all day long. It, like, why would I even go aerobic? I'll just run slightly anaerobic and I'm just that much faster. Mm-hmm. Emma, she's just a powerhouse physically, but mentally as well. She expects it. She's running like a compact, better version of young Ryan Kempson. Just, I'm going to take it out because I expect to be here someday, but I'm going to act the part now.
Mm-hmm. And what I like about her just mindset in general is that she doesn't worry about the competition, it seems. Like Kirk was saying, she's like, I know what I'm capable of, so I need to go out there and push myself to see what I can do. And I mean, ultimately, that's how champions are made. Like, the process of improving themselves is going to trump the process of beating a Lindsay Webster and having that be the only thing that's fueling her. So Emma has that. And honestly, she doesn't really take this that serious. She just goes out and this is fun and she likes to push herself hard. So I think she would have less fun if she, like, was tactical and, like, sat back and, like, let other people dictate what she was going to do in the race. So she just goes out and blasts and it's great. And I love it.
And it highlights the difference between the men's and women's field, which is, we talked about 15 guys on the male side who were kind of that demigod status, like not mere mortals. They've all done non-mere mortal things. There's only 7 on the women's side. And at that point, engine can just win you the day. You don't have to be flying in and out of obstacles. You don't have to be taking time back. Emma can just power her way. She can just be a fantastic runner and very functionally strong. And she can just take her time and power up and over things and just get right back to running because the gaps are just bigger. She doesn't have to worry about losing time on things. So she just throws her fitness at it with no regard.
And it's great to see, you know, it's like,
you brought up something, Rich, that was like interesting about, you said that Emma doesn't take this that seriously. And I was thinking about like the men's field compared to the women's field right now. And man, like a guy like Hobie Call, when he was racing, brought such fun into the sport and really enlivened the men's side of the field. Right. But right now we have like a bunch of like testosterone and bravado in front of the men's field. And people are out there just sucking wind and living in the pain cave. And then you look at the women's field and they're working hard, but like you got a Lindsay Webster smirking on course and you have an Emma visibly out there having fun. And you have a Rhea Coble who screams with joy when she hits a spear throw. Like, these women are actually, like, compared to the men, like the women are out there, they're kind of fun to watch, like having fun out there. They're being a little sportsmanship. They're doing the Hobie Call thing a little better than the men are right now. And I think you can just see it in the racing. That's how I feel about it. I don't know if you guys notice that difference or not, but I have.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point. It's undeniable too. I didn't thought about it from that perspective of comparing the two, but yeah, the dudes, they don't look like they're having very much fun. Nope. They're very upset when they miss stuff. they're just hammering as hard as they can, hanging on for dear life.
That's a good point. I'd only looked at it from the other side of the view, which is the guys are taking it too seriously. They're too caught up and they're nervous to pull the trigger. Afraid they might miss. But I didn't look at it as, the women are out there just firing.
Yeah.
They're firing. And they're chatting with each other. You hear them giving a little, you know, a little word to the cameraman every once in a while here and there. They're out there ribbing each other, even, or ribbing the cameraman. You just haven't seen that out of the women really as much as the men in the past. And I feel like that has just like turned a little. If you watch the slow recap, you had seen like some conversating going on between the rabbits and the runners, and they're just kind of out there having what I appeared to be a good time.
Would you guys do that? Have you guys ever in a race been like, hi, like, oh, this is so fun. Hi, camera people. Megita, hi. Like, would, like, I wouldn't do that. Like, it's outside of my character within this specific realm of my life when competition. It's like, all right, let's just kind of like tunnel it down. But have you guys done that before?
It's a little easier when you're winning.
I guess that's true.
Don't do it in eighth place.
Yeah, in eighth place, you're not like, it's like, hey man, stop goofing around, try harder.
There's something to that though. How many times have you gone out to pace a buddy in a run and hung on longer than you would have because you don't care how much it hurts because you're not out there for you? Or you've rabbited a race, or Jack Bauer running on some of these climbs and descents, rabbiting the women, saying, I think I was running faster than I would have run in the race. But because you're not worried about the blow up, kind of just lean into it a little more, because who cares? What's the worst that could happen? There is some power to that. We've talked about it in the mindset episodes where, you know, there's science behind showing subliminal smiley faces versus frowny faces gets people percentage points further on a stress test. So maybe it's not just they don't care as much. It's that they're better at unlocking their performance. And some of the guys are actually putting cages on themselves rather than just like, what's the worst that can happen? Let's fire some shots.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt these dudes are taking it too seriously and they're hurting their performance.
Yeah.
100%. But that's on them. And a lot of times you see that with younger athletes, a lot of the female athletes at this point, even the young athletes who are in the sport, they're very in it for the joy of it. And I think a lot of the guys have come over for the competition of it. And maybe that's just the breakdown. Maybe that has nothing to do with male or female. It's just that personality type that we currently have in the men's field is just kind of wound up a little bit tight.
And I think that bears itself out in the results. If you look back to demigod status on the women's side, we look at seven of them who have U.S. National Series podiums, North American podiums or wins, or World Championship podium winner top five. There are only seven. And do you know what they finished? First through seven.
One through seven.
They all went out and A, trusted their fitness, and B, took care of business. Mm-hmm. And so the first available spot was eighth place on the women's side.
Yeah.
Eighth place. And you know who took that?
Yeah, Tiffany Palmer took it, and that's your inside info. You always have the info on her. You never share what's going on. She comes out and crushes Big Bear again.
Tiffany Palmer, eighth place, which means that she, in my mind, had probably the second or third best race at Big Bear. Because basically it was the top seven versus the field, and Tiffany beat the field. She took care of business first every six, because although we probably could have picked out 15 women who we'd all thought had about equal chance to be top three of the next. And she beat them all.
Yeah, she was undrafted. Bernice Barrera, who I don't know. Do you guys know her at all? Have you seen results from her?
I think both Barreras are Mexican from the Mexico race series.
Okay. So she finished ninth, and so she was the second undrafted athlete from us who placed as high as who would have scored for someone's team who we didn't have in. So the top two, that was a straight up battle. It seemed like that, you know, Emma was giving Lindsay everything that she wanted, which is, again, like, if Emma's in that sky race, is she on the podium then? Does she get second in that sky race that Lindsay was at? Should Emma be doing sky races now? She's probably
sky
doing pretty well.
A little tricky. Sky races are different than mountain racing in that they get exponentially more technical.
Mm.
And you're always descending. It's not like, I mean, you have an initial big climb, but then it's a lot of these after that as you run the ridges. And so Lindsay's always leaning into her very best skill. I'm not saying Emma can't. I'm just saying it's a very different than running Tahoe Mountain is not running a European sky race because you don't do the ridgeline technical run over whatever's in your path kind of thing. But she did answer that. What we asked of her, can she descend non-Tahoe mountains? Can she climb non-Tahoe mountains? And what was that answer loud and clear?
That's what I'm saying. I can't wait to see the coverage of this just so we could see her go down. I think that's going to be really fun. Like, if she goes at it the same aggression, I can't imagine that she breaks at all. You know, I think she's just going to hammer going down. This is where we need Jack, man. Jack, where are you,
buddy? Should have Strava stalked her. I don't think she's on Strava, but I was just happy. I was just worried. You know, I mentioned that I thought the race last year in Big Bear in the fall was a snooze fest on the women's side. And we had ourselves a race to watch. It was down to the wire on both sides, which is exciting. I mean, speaking of depth of field, like when I just pulled the numbers, we had, there's 21 minute gap between first and 10th on the women's side, and just around five for the men. So it's got to tighten up. And that gap all the way went back to, 49 minutes from first to 25th on the women. And it was only, 17 minutes on the men from first to 25th. So there's some gaps to fill. There's some shoe, like placements to step into still, but at least up front, because, you know, in the coverage, they're going to focus solely on one and two and maybe three. So we'll have a battle to watch, which is what I care about, being entertained when I'm on this assault bike, right? So selfishly, I'm happy even just for that.
So let's get into let's start talking about some stocks, right? So we don't have to go through the depth of the field and see how everybody finished. Let's just talk about these athletes and how the race went and now what that means to us and to the fans of the sport. So the idea is we're gonna buy or sell or hold a stock if we already had some fake stock in these athletes. Do you guys, I'm not much of an investor. I understand it enough, I guess, but I just don't toss my money into it. But we're going to look at it this way. You guys dabble? You paying attention?
Micro dabble.
You dabble? I hand my money to people much smarter than me, and then they dabble. So the answer is no. Yeah.
So you can even look at that as like sports gambling, which I but I like kind of know like what the trends are and things like that. So we'll be able to just kind of talk about what we think. So I want to go through, I'm just going to throw some different athletes at you. And we're going to talk about what happened to their stock after this past weekend and if you would buy it, sell it, or just leave it. First one, Chris Rogowski. Bracken, what happened with Chris's stock this weekend?
I mean, she's Bitcoin from a year ago. You could not buy her fast enough right now. She took what we all thought to be true about her and then just stacked like three more layers on top of it. I don't think we can use hyperbole correctly with her because it's not really hyperbole right now. She's just that good. I don't get it.
I was truly shocked about what happened at High Rocks, about her taking the win, you know, like in such a deep field, an international field. I wasn't surprised that she came over and raced, but I was surprised that she got on the podium. It's like her stock has just skyrocketed. It's going to be at an all-time high. This might be a little bit too expensive to buy. I might have missed it.
I'm glad you convinced. I'm glad you convinced to draft her, Bracken. I don't think anybody could have predicted it going that well. Even maybe Chris herself. I think she's just starting to realize her superwoman powers. You even take a guy like a Ryan Atkins and make him double up like that. I'm like, could he have pulled it off? Especially with like even the month leading in. I'm like, I don't know like what she has done. And then a course to pull it off on a day two, to do it in a Big Bear on legs where the power has been sucked out of them. And there's no doubt there's some DOMS in her legs that 12 hours later. Like you could pull it off maybe on a flatter course, or maybe you could pull it off on a more forgiving or a technical course, which is going to slow you down a little bit. But this is just like power output. It was just like impressive. It's just, I don't know how she pulled it off. It's just stocks way up. Yep. Buying all day.
All right. I guess we'll hold on. We'll have to pause things. Oh, Jack's here. Looking spry, feeling good about where he came through.
There's fashionably late and there's whatever this hey, guys. Is.
Hey, Jack.
No,
we don't want to hear it.
And I missed 7 hours of work. I'm so screwed this week, but the people need me for part of this, so I'm doing it.
The people is us, so thank you for being here. I missed you. Not a lot, but I missed you some.
Yeah.
I did. We're
you were not here to defend yourself for over an hour, so you're kind of screwed.
Yeah. So Jack, we kind of went through the races and we're getting into the game of stocks right now. We just started, so we're catching you up. So we're going through, we're going to talk about different athletes and what their, and if we would buy or sell their stock. And we just started talking about Chris Rogowski.
Rich, bye. Jack, you've both done High Rocks. I've done a High Rocks. What does it destroy the most? Outside of like your lats and traps, It destroys your quads, your hips, and your upper inner hamstring groin.
Mm-hmm.
Everything you need for a steep mountain course. I just don't get it. And she was better. She was closer to the top two women in terms of how she was performing than the chase pack, realistically. She was actually better. And maybe not time-wise or whatever, but her appearance on course from what I could see. She belonged in the next stratosphere. It wasn't like she was embroiled in a chase and then snuck through when people missed obstacles. She was mm-hmm. just that good from the start.
It did seem that way. And what Kirk said, he said 12 hours. That's not hyperbole on it. Her race was 6:30 Pacific time at High Rocks. She probably finished at 7:38 or whatever. And then had to drive 4 hours. And the award ceremony was late. I didn't get back to my hotel until 10 p.m. So she probably didn't leave the convention center until like 9:30. And then driving to Big Bear. So it wasn't just what High Rocks can do to you. It's just the lack of sleep, the travel, the stress, like the up and down of that day. And to come back and be even and just be like, I'm here. Like, let's go. Let's battle. And you're right, Bracken. She was in third. Her and Annie were battling for that third spot. But Chris has never run with Annie before in a national series race. She's never run away from a Rose or a Rhea like that. So it's like, what?
We got a chance to talk at High Rocks before High Rocks. And then after we did an interview with her afterwards, and I chatted with her off mic for a bit, and she said some scary things. She's like, I've been training at altitude. She goes, Bracken, I think I'm ready for altitude finally. Yeah, she's been in Colorado for like 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Like, I think I beat altitude. She's like, you know, and VJ was talking about how, you know, when you first do it, you've got to run effort because you can't run paces at altitude. She's like, and he was right, but it was the opposite. I was like running and I was like, well, yeah, it's kind of hurting and everything, but I'm running faster than I'd be running at sea level. We're starting to get scary glimpses that maybe what we're seeing is true, that she is just a responder to end all responders. Like, she adapted to altitude in under 3 weeks and then went from like maybe two standard deviations of race performance at altitude, from never being near Annie to pushing Annie. Now, Annie's not prime Annie right now, but it doesn't matter. She's still a version of her. I've never seen someone respond and adapt as quickly as Chris is. She might be more freakish than Ryan, which I don't know if we could even envision prior to her.
I mean, it's hard to say anything. Yeah, maybe she just does the opposite. Maybe like when she doesn't sleep, she gets better. when she is tired, she's better. Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to explain, but I think right now she's running on all-time confidence. I don't think I have enough money to buy. I think I missed it. I think I'm out. I think, Bracken, you have some Chris stock. Congratulations. Maybe give a little bit to Kirk, send it that way. But yeah, she's definitely Bitcoin. That's a perfect analogy for that.
Except that she's real. Unless she literally just shatters eventually with all this work. She's a real thing. She's not going anywhere.
Decentralized way to kind of all right, next name, Nick Mask. Finished 17th overall here.
Let me add with that real quick. I thought she I was gonna say, since I was out there with the camera for the race, when she reached the bottom of the hill in third place on that first big descent, I was like, she had to have missed like a turn or something. Like, there's no way she's in third. That was how impressive it was. And everybody who saw her as the third person to come by after Emma and Lindsay, it was just, we were just like, how is she human? She's got to be a robot.
Did anybody else double up that we aren't like acknowledging? Do we know how that went? Did anybody that we know other than her double up? Nobody. I just
not in the elite. Maybe there was an age grouper somewhere who did both.
If Jack gets to derail us, I want to derail with one question for the group. Can we think of one male who could do what she did? And I'm not saying on that day. Let's give them 3 months to prep. Is there a single male who could win High Rocks Worlds and go top three at Big Bear against an equivalent field? So let's water down the field a little bit. Is there someone, or vice versa, could win Big Bear and go top three in High Rocks Worlds? Does that person exist?
Well, I mean, the answer is no. Kent. Well, why not Ryan Kent?
I don't think so. I don't think you can get yourself in the kind of shape to win High Rocks and have the size and strength and then go. and then go and run as well at in a mountain course like that that's over an hour. I just don't see it without anybody. And you can say Hunter, nope. Atkins isn't going to win High Rocks World Champs. So even if you give him 3 months, this is not going to happen, right? So I don't see it.
I don't know. If you like the back to back, but over 3 months, I don't know. Big Bear, the course specifically, probably not. All right. So we got through that. We're all buying if we can afford the Chris stock. And that's not saying that her stock's not going to go even higher, but she might just be like an Apple, right? Just always performs well, just going to be very expensive to get. But if you buy it, there's still more. She's not at her peak, but she's at a very high level. How about Nick Mask? Finished 17th in this race. We buying, selling, holding?
Holding. Isn't that first big level altitude mountain race just a slap in the face no matter how good you are? I feel like the learning curve there is so steep that, yeah, of course we expected him not to do as well as he did in slow, right? I think speaking for myself, coming from sea level, trying to race mountains, you give him a free pass and say, let's wait till the next one and see what happens there. That's what I think. I think you hold and bide your time with him. What do you guys think?
He hit the rig in
so the
10th or 12th, roughly.
Jack, your volume's real low. Can you give us any more volume?
Sorry.
Internet's slow too.
Yeah. So he hit the rig in like 10th or 12th. So he was looking pretty good in the race or so. So he was running a good race. I think it was a good performance.
He was descending with Kempson.
West Virginia in the past, right, Rich? Yeah.
Yeah, West Virginia to go great for him, an East Coast race.
Yeah. Yeah, but he was looking confident power hiking. So that was good to see. You're not sure if everybody can hike after showing that top end speed, but he did look good.
I'm buying. I'm actually buying. I know his stock took a ding with, what, 17th place?
17th overall, yeah.
Well, we talked about 15 people with championship pedigree already. They all beat him, all right? That dings your stock a little bit. But of those people, he has the least experience at altitude. This is really his first big boy mountain race. And what I like about it is that he inserted himself into the race. Mm-hmm. He actually went out and tried, and he descended. You can learn the uphill running. You can get better at altitude, but downhill to some extent is you have it or you don't. You can improve it, but some people can never switch that downhill flip on. He's got it.
That's what I was thinking too, Bracken. I'm going to buy. I'm going to hope that people are selling and probably get his price a little bit low because if everyone would look at him like, oh, one trick pony type of athlete. But like you said, it wasn't the case. He was with Kempson and going down at the multi-rig. He was descending hard. He just missed a spear, you know, and where the depth was in that 2 to 20 or 3 to 20, right? And that wasn't a place you couldn't hold on to your place at this race with a missed spear.
Rich, have you talked to him after the race? Do you know how he's feeling about it?
He's feeling good. He's like happy with it. I mean, he's a competitive person, but I think he knew, like he learned what that race was, which it's really hard to feel something like that in those moments when you're like, you know, you're like, hey, I'm really fit. I'm as fast as anybody here. I can run hills. But then when you're at 7,200 feet at 30%+, it's something you got to feel. So he's feeling pretty good.
Good.
So I would like him for anything's longer courses are going to be better for him. He's excited for like a Utah and for a Mexico.
And I think he's dangerous in Utah.
Yeah.
Slightly more runnable, a little longer, a little less intense. Missed spears happen at altitude from inexperience and fatigue. It's like throwing in bad conditions. Mm-hmm. It's like it's a little windy or that the target is slightly uphill. People who haven't thrown a spear exhausted at altitude generally miss because you have to feel it one time before you know how you need to address it. So yeah, this is a write-off for me. I saw what I needed to see. I think that those tent pole skills are there and I think he's going to be just fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would sell off some of my stocks elsewhere to pick up more Nick Mask. Let's go. How are we feeling about Annie Doobie's performance? Rich, where does that put her stock? Go ahead, Jack.
Oh, I was just going to say, how does Nick feel about Superverse beasts? Does he prefer a certain distance now that the remainder of them are going to be beasts?
He thinks he's going to be better at longer stuff.
Jack, you can't show up late and not listen.
our guy's brain, the painters, the missing the flights, work deadlines. Hey. People.
I shouldn't have even shown up.
Rule number one of showing up late to class is you got to be on point from that. You can't drop your book. Your phone can't go off. You can't fall asleep. If the teacher calls on you, you better have the next three answers ready.
Jack, have you ever been in trouble in class as much as you have been during Race Brain? This is the second time you've been reprimanded by the teacher in two episodes.
I've got some stories. Yeah, I one time my friend Nate, he was.
You don't get to show up late to class and start. It's not story hour. We'll save this for an episode where you're on time.
We have a couple open episodes.
And the teacher thought there was like a murder in the class.
Just red everywhere.
There seems to be like a 2 second delay in everything, so I'm not timing it right.
I know.
Yeah, you're flipping a little
when you're ready to talk, and we'll know.
Yeah, that's a good way to do it on the fly.
If you need to go to the bathroom, we have a hall pass on the left.
So Nick, all right. Annie Doobie finished fourth. Where is her stock in Kirk, in your eyes? What do you think with Annie Doobie? Are you buying, selling? Are you holding? What are you doing with Annie?
Well, I'm buying that all day. After time away, because she didn't run with Emma or Lindsay necessarily, she's only going to traject the right direction this year. Isn't it her first real race back? This, she hasn't done any trail racing or anything, has she, that I know of? So
she has done some, race, but like flat, nothing super technical or okay. Crazy hilly.
This just confirms that she's exactly who we thought she was, and she's going to continue staying up at the front end of the women's field. And I have a feeling it's only going to go the right direction for her. So I'm keeping or buying if I don't have any already. For sure. She's worth the investment. I don't think this is no scars for her in my eyes.
You would think her price would be lower after the injury, right? So if you had some, it's probably going to kind of level out. I think that the people that held on, maybe some people sold early on the injury. Jack, how'd she look out there? Because did you get to catch much of the chase pack in the race?
No, David Magida handled that while I kind of went towards the end. But yeah, she did look confident. Obviously, she missed her spear. But, I mean, her gap was a little bigger than it was versus Lindsay last year on a pretty similar course. So I think that works against her. But my take on her is that she kind of pulled a Joshua Reed, where you're worried about Josh's shoulder. You know, that wasn't an issue in New Jersey Ultra Beast a couple weeks ago. It was not an issue here. Annie just had surgery 4 months ago. She proved she can make it through a relatively harder race, obstacle-wise, compared to normal, without worrying about her elbow kind of giving her issues. It was her left elbow, I believe, and she's a right-handed thrower, so it's not like that affected her spear throw either. But the overhead stuff and crawls, she seemed fine on it. So I think that she's only trending up.
Yeah. Bracken, you buying, selling, holding?
I'm actually going to hold. And it's not because of Annie. It's because of Emma. Annie proved that she's back. My big question on her was not fitness. It wasn't even mindset. She's a straight arm swinger on all obstacles, which is all shoulder and back engagement. That's how Joshua launched his out of orbit in Tahoe. And so that was my fear. Is she going to have to start going 90, which is going to eliminate some of her freakish ability on obstacles on Stairway to Sparta, where she's got up when some people can't, because she can launch up and grab one-handed. She checks some boxes for me. My problem is she was a second place lock all last year, and now Emma's here, and Emma now is a lock to fight for first in every race. So my hold is not even on Annie. It's that Emma lowered Annie's ceiling slightly, potentially. And so that's why I think her stock doesn't have the same drawing power as last year.
Yeah, I think that's fair. It probably dipped from her second place performance at World Championships to now, but it could definitely go back up. I think hold is the move here. I think hold is the move. Don't want to sell this one.
But I feel like last year, didn't we feel like maybe she was capable of winning? Like she could win a big one last year. Now it seems like there's too many barriers maybe in front of her to do so. Like now it's beyond the realm of possibility when the players all show up. Where last year she was the hot commodity, right? We thought maybe she was capable, and now seeing the time gap here and knowing there's stronger runners in front of her potentially takes that away. And so I can see your point there. I can see your point.
And I want to be clear that it's today's snapshot in time.
Right.
I don't think that her time has left, that ship has sailed on being able to win it. But last year, let's say in Carolina, when she was leading a race, it was because Lindsay failed. Mm-hmm. She didn't really take a race on ever. This year, Lindsay needed a failure to beat Emma.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just
twice.
In terms of current hot trajectories, Emma is limiting mm-hmm. Annie in my portfolio.
Where at the end of last year at Abu Dhabi, Annie outran her, Emma. Outran Emma at the end. So like it was kind of looking that way that she could beat her on a course. Like Emma didn't miss until the multi-rig, which Annie was already through. So she does have that high end ability, but just the way that things are looking this year so far early, it's hard to bet like at Mexico or something like that. Like what her high end is, you know. So yeah. I think hold is the move. All right. Jack, you drafted Kempson. You buying, selling, or you holding Kempson?
At the moment, I think you have to sell because he announced his schedule earlier, or like a few weeks ago, saying that he was going to show up to Utah and a couple other ones throughout the rest of the year. And he just made a post saying that he doesn't chase series unless he thinks he's going to win. So I think that he self-admittedly is not in the shape that he needs to be to repeat his OCR World 15K return. Like if you see him on Savage's courses, he's been a monster, but I think looking at the rest of the U.S. National Series schedule, he's just not in that fitness at the moment. Doesn't mean he won't be back the rest of the year, but I think current snapshot, you got to sell him, unfortunately.
Kirk, what do you think? You buying, selling?
Based on that logic, it's where my mind had gone as well. I mean, I don't know if he's one to pull the plug on races that he's previously committed to, at least on social media, which holds little weight, I suppose. But I got to agree, he may just pick and choose from here on out, or maybe give one more race a crack. But I don't know, that field is getting so thick up front, man. It really is. And if you're not on your A game, which he self-admittedly has not been, you might have to sell and maybe pick up a little stock of someone else at this point.
You could probably get a decent price. Hearing you guys selling makes me feel like I should hold, but like he finished 11th here. Probably could still get a decent price on him. Scoop up some more Nick Mask with what you get, or a little bit of Annie Doobie in there if you could. But yeah, I think you kind of have to sell based off of the performance, off of the fitness. What do you think, Bracken?
If this were the Spartan Race Brain podcast, I'd be selling. But it's not. It's just Race Brain.
Mm-hmm.
He has been the best at Savage Race yet this year, and he's beaten the who's who of Savage Race so far. He also is the defending OCR World Champion, and he's definitely going back there this year. So my take on Kempson is that he has had a disjointed, disrupted last year of training. He, on his trajectory of, you know, that supernova ride he was on, still never cracked the podium at a mountain championship race. So he needed his top fitness to be able to do that, because he's just less of an altitude mountain goat than he is all other things. His greatest skills in OCR don't get tapped into in Big Bear or in Utah or in Tahoe. So we probably wouldn't have expected a podium out of him anyway, and he's at a reduced capacity, so I don't even care about his result here. I think he's the OCR racer this year, not a Spartan altitude racer, so I'm holding on to him.
All right, I think it's fair to hold. Everybody else is
what What context are we holding or selling? This is not just a Spartan context. I thought we were talking about the series here. So there's a little muddied waters, right? But
oh, we're talking.
What context are we buying? The whole umbrella, everything,
the whole deal, all of it. That's why. That's what. That's what Jack's. Chris even higher. All right, so Jack, you thinking you're gonna hold then? Because I mean, it's low. You could buy more.
I already scooped up the shares that hit the market.
All right, Bracken already bought it all. Majority shareholder, Bracken.
There were different rules when you.
I'm gonna go ahead and sell some too. I think you can get a good price. I think I'll sell to Bracken. Give me your money, and I'm gonna go take mine and get something real nice and shiny. How about a little bit of Aaron Newell? Who's buying Aaron Newell here?
I'm in.
I might not have any money left because I'm buying everyone or holding, but Aaron is trending in the right direction. This is how you come back from surgery, people. This is what you do. You don't shy away from things, but you grind away, you grind away, you grind away, and suddenly you're fit.
Was I the only one with really low expectations from him? And then, so really, he was only going to be like a bright star of a result. Because for me, maybe he tricked me with his surliness on social media, which is constant. but it's true. But damn, like that guy, there's only one direction that dude's heading. And I would say this course would not even be a good one for him to go out and like really assert himself into the mix of athletes, knowing the other athletes' strengths. And so I would probably spend the majority of my money out of anybody we've talked about. If I'm going to trade in and out, I'd be buying him all day. Give me some Newell.
See, Kirk, I disagree that that this course didn't suit him. He spent a month in Ecuador at elevation before this, just running in the mountains. We know he's always aggressive on the first climb of races. So if he's in it at that point, you know, and still has some legs for the second half, he's going to be dangerous. So I feel like it had potential, especially after we saw him podium at Savage Series races earlier this year. You knew he had some speed there, and he's always been a good racer at Tahoe. Like we saw he was second place, third place for a good portion of the race a few years ago. And I don't know. I feel like this was a good venue for him, given his recent time in Ecuador.
I'm going to go ahead and hold. I'm going to go ahead and wait this one out. I think his price is spiked a little bit too much. You guys are really feeling happy about what he's done. I'm going to wait for him to go to Mexico or Utah and really blow up hard, and then I'll scoop up some of that afterward. He held on. I mean, we haven't seen him race beyond like a Savage distance or an hour distance in a long time. So I'm going to go ahead and wait on this just to see. But does this put him as the Savage favorite now? Would you put this directly into Maryland, which is this weekend, and be like, all right, this is him and Kempson are tied. He just kind of laid it to him on this race.
I'm going to say no and leave it at that, because Kempson is just better at this type of thing right now, I think. But I'm going to do a rare thing and agree that, Jack, you were right. The course on paper does look good for him. But I'm going to snatch back that compliment right away and scalpel into it a little bit. We did see him win Savage Race, but he wasn't even on screen until the last 800 meters, which meant that his capacity was low. So I actually thought he brought less fitness into Savage. I didn't think it proved fitness. It proved that he was the fastest obstacler at the end. And then he got all that extra energy of suddenly being near the lead. Then you go to an altitude course where fitness is the only thing that matters. I thought he would struggle on the first climb. He didn't. So I knew he would do well. I didn't think he would do this well, especially since you can't obstacle your way back into it at Spartan. His single greatest strength still is crazy lashing, flying, releasing moves. He's going to be a problem at OCR Worlds if he stays healthy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm still waiting.
And he lives
you guys
on the
can
East
have
Coast,
it.
So that terrain is right up his alley. Mm-hmm.
All right. So, Jack, you're buying? Or you're holding?
I'm definitely buying Aaron.
Yes. You're buying? Okay. Have him. All right. What did this race tell us about Rose? Where's our Rose stock at?
Anyone learn anything this race about Rose?
Jack, like, I don't know.
Right. If you're sick, do you take anything out of the race unless you win? If you win, you can say, wow, they're a bigger beast than we thought. And if anything else happens, it's like, well, they're sick. And they did, and she did fine.
Finished sixth. Was she in the mix? I didn't get to see much of that chase back. The only thing we really got to see were the two, and we saw Alex and Annie doing burpees together. So they must have been close, but Rose, I didn't see anything of her. She was still 4 minutes behind Alex with the missed and Annie with the missed spear.
Yeah. I didn't see much of her throughout the race either. Hold.
Now this might be a place. I mean, how much higher
is definitely a hold
could her stock go? Exactly. So is there, like, you probably have it. It probably got you some good. I would think that this stock is on this decline. Not everybody is too much of, people are still like, ah, and they like her. They root for her. I might sell some.
I think the best argument made to date is in regards to Annie Doobie in relationship to Emma. I think everybody's stocks, unfortunately, just takes a little hit because Emma exists. And you think, mm-hmm. like, Rose has got to be near, and like, we're starting to split hairs with how much Rose is going to improve her fighter claw her way into, you know, podium contention or winning a race. We have all these other contenders who are still like going to knowingly be trending the right direction. So I think like that, the Emma rule applies to almost every woman that's in that like 3 to 8 range, unfortunately. Yeah.
I want to be as respectful as possible about what I'm about to say, because if you say this incorrectly, it's very going to
be good.
This is a good one.
Rose was a better version of me. Middle distance runner, came into OCR, had a lot of success when the sport wasn't huge, faded in success, came back a little bit for a ways, and she's now continued to be better than I am now. However, her time at the very best of what she'll ever be is gone, just as a function of age and the new talent coming into the sport.
Mm-hmm.
And unlike me, she was never really a short court specialist, despite being always one of the fastest 800 milers in the field. She was never hyper smooth or efficient through obstacles. She's very strong and athletic, and she would power through them, but that's not really rewarded at short course.
Mm-hmm.
So as she continues to age, I don't think the option for her is to drop down into specialist. I think the option is to keep fighting the good fight and start becoming, you know, intrigued by the idea of fighting for podiums. I don't know if that'll ever do it for her. It certainly didn't do it for me. And since she's better than I ever was, I can't imagine it's going to do it for her. I think the next option might be embrace that weird route that middle distance runners seem to have and go ultra. She was never a hyper efficient runner, but when she goes slower, she actually gets a little more efficient, or when she goes very fast, she does. But at that like threshold for running from her, she churns a bunch, and that's not rewarded in these kind of races we have nowadays. I think it might be time to start thinking about ultra. She's not done at what she does right now. She's got another couple of years of this, but I think she could move in and be a force right now in the ultra scene, where it could reward her very powerful athletic skill set she brings to the table, her altitude living, and all the time she's put into trying to become a super beast runner. I think she can extend out, and her mind is a weapon for her. She has the most like dialed in, always happy-go-lucky. That's really rewarded on an ultra course. So I think that that might be the next pivot for her career.
That is an excellent argument for projecting and to buy. I'm still selling. Thanks, Bracken. That was great, though. I like it.
I would sell her in relation to having a chance of winning. But let's not forget, less than a year ago, she got second in West Virginia. She had another podium in the U.S. National Series race. She's improved her mountain running game. Somebody has to finish third place in these races. We know that Lindsay and Emma are ahead. Lindsay's not going to be in Mexico. Somebody's got to finish there. I don't know. She's consistently in that 3 to 5 range. I know she got 6 this race, but I don't think you can just cast her away yet because of the total depth. I think that she still is a contender if she runs a clean race at most of these races.
Right. It's like, who else are you going to buy? If you sell it, like, what else are you going to get?
She's on the same ability level of Alex Walker and Annie Duke, you know, plus or minus a small percent, and you wouldn't sell Alex right now. So I don't think I don't think Rose's stock of winning was there, period. But being a podium threat, it's not going away yet.
Yeah. All right, let's do one more and then we'll get
Did you get to talk about Rose?
Oh yeah, did you talk about Rose? Are you holding it? Selling it?
Kirk's on delay.
Oh, you asking me about this? I figured you're asking, okay, Jack about this. No, I'm not on delay. I'm real time. I'm holding right now because I don't know how sick she was, and I just don't know what that if that indicates anything or not. I don't really know how much that factored in, so I need to bide my time a little bit there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And I don't think I wanted to make the statement that I'm casting her aside. I just think that we see what the ceiling is right now, and she can sit there for probably a few years. I don't think she's any lower than Annie or Chris Roglowski or why am I blanking out on this Texas woman's name right now?
Alex Walker.
The only difference is that their star is ascending. Their stars are
ascending, whereas she is fighting to hold her position in the sport, and I still think there's room to ascend in ultra. So I'm not casting her aside. She's not done. She could probably do this till she's 45. She's one of those people that time's going to be very kind to, but her peak is behind her.
And that's where, like, unless she does go into ultra, that's where she could start making you money. She's just tying it up and it's secure right now, which is better than a riskier, like Nick Mask or something like that. So if you want to hold,
if you had Abu Dhabi and Tahoe 24-hour ultra right now, which one would she have a chance to win?
Neither, because
Ray. Neither. Yeah.
What about top three?
Maybe.
I could
say
it was 6-8 at Abu Dhabi. A lot of things can go wrong in ultras. We've seen it happen to even Lindsay, but she probably would finish better than 6-8 at, you know, 24-hour if she tried it. Fuel,
yeah,
I'm not saying it's right. It's just intriguing. The middle distance route to ultra is a proven thing, and it doesn't make sense, but it's there.
She's been a good stock up to this point. If you're going to hold, go ahead and hold. Last one, and we'll wrap this thing up. Where are we at with Ryan Woodstock?
I don't think anybody wants to say it, but...
I'm holding out on pure hope and love for the man. His results are not trending positive, but he took such a kick to the junk with everything that happened with Abu Dhabi World Championships last year. Mm. And he was so fit and doing things he hadn't done in years that I think it took all motivation off the table for the time being. I think that he's a physical specimen at his age. I think he can still do things that we can't. And I think he requires the right motivation to do it. And it's clearly not there right now. So right now, based off his results, you have no choice but to sell. But I truly, truly believe he's one big Ryan Woods training block and motivation and cutting out his wine at night away from being back to the world beater, or at least the North American beater that we all know he can be.
There is a 43-year-old just like Ryan Woods who finished in the top three at Big Bear. It's father time is not completely against him at this point on mountain races. That skill set doesn't go away completely. I think you nailed it that the motivation isn't there. But if he wants to put in another good training block, he's still one of the 3 to 5 best climbers in the sport. Not the best descender, but he still doesn't fall apart there. And we know his top end speed has kind of gone away, as we've seen in Savage, pure 5K, 10K speed. But he's a special talent. And I think if he gives it one last go, he's going to do something special the rest of the year. I would hold. He was at Twister.
You got it.
That was when he failed it, right? But he was with Rylan, who ended up finishing fifth this race.
He was in the mix.
At the same point, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think he kind of just gave up after that point because he's like, I can't make it up on these guys at this point. But he was sort of there.
I think you have to hold with the fact that there's beast, if he is doing the series from here on out and with the fact that they are beasts and they are mountains, that's reason enough to hold, wouldn't you say? Because that's only going to favor all the bank deposits he's made over the past 2.5 decades of training. So I would imagine that, and all the savages he's done so far, they've been short and spicy, right? And so if there's any chance that he has, you know, Woodsy came back and won the North American champs in West Virginia when he had a shit show of a year before that, and that was only 2 years ago. So you can't fully sell yet. Like, all signs, like, from the outside, you'd be like, sell, 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 sell. But if he sticks with the series, he's only going to move up that list significantly, right? In every race he does from this point. In the Spartan series, anyways.
Realistically, if you bought Woods and made anything, you would have had to buy him in like 2016. Dude's stock has been high for a long time, right? So if you had that and you're riding this weight, that dip down, unless you sold off, you're probably not making anything from him at this point. So if you have none, maybe you could scoop up some cheap or hold. I might cut my losses at this point. I might just be like, well, should have sold when I should have sold and I didn't. And now I'm going to get some hawk call or something.
Had a tough call with him when he was all frustrated last year. And it took me so much to get in this fitness. I'll never do it again.
Mm.
It just cost me so much. So he knows he can still do it. It just, every year it costs you more to get back to it. And he hasn't yet had the reason to do it, but I'm still saying there's a chance.
I mean, what else could he do, right? Like, I mean, it's when you're doing obstacle racing and you get yourself into that fitness and then something goes wrong, like you miss Twister or whatever, then it's like, okay, this whole training block is trash. Like, but he's already done the roads thing. He's done the mountain thing. He's done the track thing. Like, where else is he going to put this fitness at this point?
Kelowna.
Kelowna might be the move. So if you want to hold on to try to recoup a little bit more because he's at a low point now and sell off after a Kelowna or something like that, I think that'd probably be the move. All right. I'll take it. All right, boys. So
We're not allowed to even say, all right, boys. This was Lindsay's swan song national series race.
No.
I'm not gonna say a word about her.
Well, like, do you believe that?
In Utah, she said it.
I don't know.
She said what?
She's there for a bike race the week before. She's doing Utah.
For sure she's doing Utah.
She's going to do all of it. Like, she's still winning.
No, she's not.
She's still making money. Like, the retirement.
She's doing both Canada.
She'll do Canada. She'll do, yeah, if they fly her to Abu Dhabi and it's a $20,000 payout for the win, I'm guessing she'll go.
Okay.
I'm just assuming she's not retired. And it's like, she's clearly not retired.
At the top of the first climb, men and women combined, of those on Strava, she was in 20th place in 13:11 on the first climb. 19th place in 13:10 was Mark Botrus.
Wow.
Second climb, Lindsay, 10th overall, 13:45. Sandwiched in between Rylan at 13:48, 3 seconds slower, Chris Brown tied at 13:45, and just ahead was VJ at 13:22, only 23 seconds ahead of her. First descent. Well, sure, she can climb, but she doesn't descend with the best guys in the sport. First descent, 10th overall, 5:45. Ryan Woods, 5:52. Joshua Reed, who was supposedly not going to descend worse than anyone else in the men's field, 5:38, 7 seconds faster on the first descent.
Wow.
Lindsay Webster
was a monster on the descents. I was the camera
person. She has no business retiring.
I said it a couple. Yeah. She was running 5:05 to 5:10 pace casually, looking just like Lindsay always does, effortless, gaining 5-10 seconds on Emma every single descent. It was impressive to watch.
So as cool as this stat list is, do you know what it makes me wonder? What in the world was Emma doing on those climbs?
Oh,
because
right.
If Lindsay was climbing with Botrus, Chris Brown, VJ, and Rylan, what was Emma doing? Can we get her on Strava? Because
This is frightening.
Emma, she ended up reaching hurdles at the same time, or the log or hurdle thing at the same time as Brent Trail with a 5-6 minute delay for their start. I think she was the 19th person overall to reach hurdles, and she had a 5-minute delay. Like her, she had 35, 40 seconds on Lindsay on that first climb. I was like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to keep up with her, and I got a head start. She's flying.
We saw on some stories that she was with Logan Broadbent, who was second at the 15K OCR World Championships. She caught him with a 5-minute delay. I don't know, man.
It's getting to the point where people who call themselves 10 minutes pro of the race athletes, men who call themselves pro athletes, could not beat her head to head.
Who on this podcast thinks that they could have beaten Lindsay and Emma that race?
I do.
Oh, right now, maybe Kirk, not me, for sure. No way.
Okay, I was just making sure that it was only.
But I don't think it would have been easy. Yeah.
Do we get to do women's weights?
Ah, good question, Bracken.
That wouldn't
because I still would have made the difference. But then I definitely choose it. Kirk.
If you're splitting those kind of hairs. What's our timestamp here, fellas? I got a hard 5-minute limit, so I might need.
What else do we need to talk about here? So I'm good wrapping it up. We got some good stuff out of the way. Results of the draft. We didn't really talk about that.
Be true.
We can talk about the draft. So team BK, KB came in first place, 2 wins with 33 points. I was in second with 45. Jack was a 53 spot.
The record for the worst ever, but it was not good. And hence my name. Last place.
Yeah, I think Bracken had like a 70 or something last year.
Yeah, 68 or something.
That's when I misunderstood.
What is the lowest score in history? What is the lowest scoring in history?
This one's pretty low.
This is close. If you're in the mid-30s, that's a good week for you.
Okay.
So Jack, I wanted to ask you if you could create a stat for us. If we need to have a stat for like value of pick over other picks, kind of like VORP, you know, like value over replacement player. If we could do that for this, so like we could see where the best picks were, but just looking at what they had Lars in the 7th round. They had Chris in the fifth round, right? So their value over the people drafted around them would be like a plus 20 or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we'll just do it like NHL plus minus. That's what you do.
What is that?
How many goals you're on the ice for, how many goals allowed you're on the ice for, and just subtract the two.
Yeah, well, that sounds perfectly clear for us.
Yeah, but that's – yeah. Plus minus, I don't think plus minus works.
If you drafted someone 10th and they got 5th, then you're plus 5.
No, but it has to be with the women included too.
Other picks, of the draft.
Other picks too, so people can displace it. You got it.
Just brainstorm. Yeah.
Okay, we can call it fantasy draft plus minus if that's what.
Yeah.
The plus it is a plus minus, so we need that. Lars had a great plus minus. Chris had a great plus minus. Batchers had a good plus minus. I'm pretty sure. You guys did a good job. Just
hey, you did as well.
We did.
I don't know. I don't know how well we did, but
Jack, if I was writing your report card, I would just write needs improvement. I think you have space for real aggressive upward expansion.
Yeah. I would buy.
I will say that our score is not due to me, by the way, Bracken. I think most of those panned out due to choices on your end.
No.
So I don't think it was a two brains are better than one.
I pushed for Veerman. He didn't even race.
That's true. That was a
That was a big one too.
You picked Angel, who played.
Sure.
I would have picked Chris Brown.
Womp womp.
I missed out.
He did win a race. He just won the wrong one.
Yeah. Angel didn't even score for you guys. You guys were just nasty. It was like 1, 4, 3. I guess
Angel reached the spear.
I pushed for Hawk pretty hard.
You could have done even better.
Yeah, and Hawk was the final scorer, so nice job, Kirk.
Just scored.
Yeah, well, I thought he'd do better, to be honest with you, but yeah, all right.
For sure.
If your worst pick got us 9 points, I'm okay with that.
All right, all right.
So total standings, KB, you're in first with your 4-0 now. I'm 2-2, and Jack is 0-4. Man, oh man.
Bracken pulled the same thing last year and then ended up getting close.
Didn't we break That's a true. Streak of the first drafter never winning? Wasn't it the so that that has been broken by us? Isn't that true?
Yeah, now Roman the second history, drafter.
Yeah. We had just never been Roman in that history. Position before. If you date back to last year, we've got a streak going.
I think it starts. I think it stopped at the beginning of the new season. I think that's what.
No, they have hitting streaks for MLB that extend across seasons as long as you were in those games.
Well, I say it doesn't count.
I'm not saying we're the best handicappers in the game, but it definitely says OCR stats guy in my Instagram handle now.
Jack, Bracken brought some real stats today. Like that what you just heard about the climbs and descents, that was only like a fraction of the stats. Bracken had stats.
I love it. I'm bummed that I missed it. I wish I could have made the whole thing, but wasn't.
Jack, between Bracken and Rock's life for High Rocks, like where's your spot anymore?
Ex-OCR stats guy. That's what I'll put.
You were a pioneer, but now you were the Ryan Woods.
I might be like Lindsay and retire.
And still be the best there is.
He's undefeated.
We still need spreadsheets, Jack, and Bracken didn't put any together. So you might have a tiny place.
Does this count? I got my kids' little poster. These are dinosaurs.
Close enough.
Yeah, Brontosaurus, it counts. All right, so we
Not
will...
a dinosaur. No such thing.
Just OCR dinosaurs?
At that, brontosaurus is a made-up word. Although they all are in language, but that's a non-factual dinosaur.
This is for a different podcast. We'll talk about tune in next time where we talk about the legitimacy of dinosaurs, and I think we'll be talking about Savage Race next episode, right, boys? Bracken, are you on the call?
What's our date?
For what? When we're going to do it?
Oh, are you talking Maryland call?
Maryland call.
No, I'm over in the Green Isle of Ireland.
Oh, nice.
So that's a no-go. Now, if it works out, I'm going to let Matt know if our Wi-Fi situation is stable and the time zones work out. I'll give a jangle and ask to be in on the call. But as of right now, don't count on it.
Okay, cool. We'll have some sort of recap for Savage one way or another. For next week anyway. So, all right, we did it, fellas. Nice job. Ooh.